Thank you, David. It's 112 on WGN. This is John Williams. I'm here until 3 o'clock. Then we do the beat and we talk some sports. In the meantime, I've got a lot I want to talk to you about. I suppose I should get this out of the way just right off the blocks, and that is gold and white. Just in case you were wondering, I'm gold and white. My wife is gray and blue. We got a text one night from my son Thursday night, and he said, hey, this is from Grant, who's in his mid-20s now, is an athlete, is not the kind of guy who involves himself too much in swishy things. And out of the blue, we're sitting there watching TV, Brenda and I get a text. I says, hey, Grant sent us a text. What's it say? He says, what color's this dress? So I thought he'd been drinking. And so then I go ahead and show it to Brenda, and she goes, well, it's blue and gray. And I said, it's gold and white. So I sent that to him thinking that was the end of it. And then the internet blew up. And the next day I realized it was part of some sort of gigantic cultural phenomenon, the likes of which we've all talked about too much. But I also think has something going on there. And it's not even a bad thing. As much as we around the country or world share events, news, information, ideas these days, a lot of it is hostile or negative or gigantic. This was just silly and fun. And there were things about it, like how our eyes work or how we perceive the world. I like to think that I can think big thoughts so you don't have to. And one of the big thoughts I had about this is that in a world where we're all trying to resolve gigantic issues, it's probably telling to note that we don't even agree on colors. So maybe it begs us to be a little more patient or tolerant of each other. I mean, how are you going to figure out what to do with ISIS or how to solve the budget crisis when, in fact, you don't even see something as the same color as I do? One last note about that. It does bring me some sort of great relief to note that when I'll say to Brenda, that green sweater, and she'll go, what green sweater? It's blue or gray or brown or black or whatever it is. That happens to us all of the time. And I've always felt the inferior of it. You know, Brenda, I will assume, has it right, and I'm wrong because I'm an idiot. And now I realize that that's probably happening to all of us all across great swaths of our lives. People seeing something one way and not even realizing that somebody sees it another. Your LinkedIns should be updated. Your Facebook status should now say gold and white or blue and gray.
But what if it was both?
That wasn't you, was it, Kristen? I don't even think that's an option. What do you mean both?
When I first saw it on Good Morning America, I was like, oh, that's a pretty white and gold dress. I didn't even know anything about the story. I was just like, what is this? Why are
gold
they talking about this?
Yeah.
And then when they showed different angles of it or when they showed the dress on the girl's body, I was like, oh, that's blue and black.
Black, yeah. I've noticed that too. Some of the TV reports show it as blue and black. I think it's been interesting, though, that when I'm looking at it on the same device at the same time with another person, my wife or some of my colleagues here, we will see it as black and blue or gold and white, looking at it at the same time. And I've kind of flip-flopped on that a little bit myself, but generally I've been Mr. Gold and White. So the Nets stayed neutral this week. A llama drama erupted, and yeah, dress went viral. Fittingly, YouTube is just now celebrating its 10th anniversary. YouTube is 10 years old, either a couple of weeks ago in
February
an article 14th. According to the Washington Post. But the first video that was posted was April 23rd, 2005. So it'll be 10 years ago in a couple of months that the first video was posted, and that was me at the zoo, a guy standing, actually one of the co-creators of YouTube was standing at a zoo, and behind him were some elephants, and he said, well, we're here at the zoo and these are some elephants, and the cool thing about them is they have really long trunks. So Caitlin Dewey wrote in the Washington Post, it's a fact easily forgotten in a light of all of the fame and folly that's followed. But before Justin Bieber was a tabloid fixture, a Calvin Klein model, and a teen cult leader, he was, in fact, a tiny backlit figure swaying in front of a cinder block wall singing Ne-Yo's So Sick in prepubescent tenor. It was a clip shot at a local singing competition in Stratford, Ontario, where Bieber, then 12, placed third. when his mother uploaded it to YouTube in January of 2007 to share with family members outside of Stratford, she likely did not imagine that 8 years later the fuzzy handheld video would have 7.3 million views, or that it would catch the attention of Bieber's now manager, Scooter Braun, or that in the future Bieber's meticulously orchestrated YouTube videos would be shot by teams of highly paid professionals. In many ways, the narrative of Justin Bieber, she writes, arguably one of YouTube's original mainstream stars, is also the story of YouTube itself. The massive video sharing site turned 10 years old Saturday, she said a week ago, which almost passes for old age on the internet. And yet, for much of its history, YouTube was the upstart, the disruptor, the 12-year-old kid just revving to conquer the pop culture machine. That's what we're all about, co-founder Chad Hurley said in 2005. We're the ultimate reality TV. Of course, at the time, Hurley meant reality TV in its most literal sense, actual people filming dispatches from their lives. When Hurley and his co-founders registered the YouTube domain name above a pizza shop in California in February of 2005, such a concept was actually pretty unheard of. In fact, pressed to name one viral video that appeared before the dawn of YouTube, most people could probably only manage Numa Numa, the gloriously simple, unscripted webcam clip of a guy named Gary dancing to a Romanian pop song, which appeared online in December of 2004. That clip has since naturally migrated to YouTube, and there it's been watched 56 million times. I'll play a clip of that for you in a second. I love that clip. I've always loved that clip. Hiya hee, hiya hoo, Numa Numa. Anyway, YouTube in its early days was often called Flickr for video. Blogs were booming back then. Back then meaning about 10 years ago. Social networks like MySpace and Facebook, now a year old, were gaining steady steam. Google was accordingly working on its own video product, a thing aptly called Google Video. Google Video courted major Hollywood producers and inked a content deal with the National Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, yep, the people that do the Academy Awards, and Google Video would let plebeians upload content too, provided they download Google's proprietary file transfer software, submit a form's worth of statements and content about the video, and then wait for moderators to approve it. YouTube had a better idea. A video site that anyone and everyone could use. Appropriately, the first video ever uploaded to the site on April 23, 2005, was a 19-second clip of baby-faced YouTube co-founder Jawed Karam standing in front of an elephant enclosure at the San Diego Zoo. "All right, here we are, in front of the elephants," he said. And there it was, the ultimate reality TV, life in its unscripted, pedestrian honesty. YouTube's users were uploading the equivalent back then of one blockbuster of videos a day, they like to say. By December, the site was moving two blockbusters per day. By January, they had dropped the blockbuster metaphor altogether. YouTube represented the democratization of a medium that had once belonged solely to Hollywood studios and media conglomerates. Accordingly, many of YouTube's classic viral videos are simple productions, stuff like 2007's Charlie Bit My Finger. On Facebook this week, I posted on my Facebook page, I hope you like me there, facebook.com/KingJohn. I'm King John on Facebook. And there we posted the Huffington Post compilation of the best of the past 10 years of YouTube. It's 200 clips, and they go by in 3 minutes. And among the clips that are there,
her song is called Give Me More for a reason, because all you people want is more, 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 more. Leave her alone. You're lucky she even performed for you, bastard. Leave Britney alone.
Do you know what that one is? By the way, every one of these. Oh, my God. The baby's going ba, 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 ba. It's this fantastic video of two little babies, two little kids, and they're standing there, and they're arguing, but they don't speak English. They're just tiny little tots. And so they're yelling at each other and pantomiming with their hands, but they don't speak English. But it seems like they do speak some sort of common language.
Chocolate rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain. Chocolate rain.
Remember Tay Zonde?
Oh, I can never forget that voice.
I love that. And our own Kurt Vanderaa, who worked for years at WGN Radio and, of course, with Kathy and Judy, and I had a chance to bump into him a lot of times, he made a song for me called William's Rain. He wants to be king someday. William's Rain. Very good song.
We've got to find that.
I can't find it.
What?
The world may be a better place for it.
A baby born will die before the sin.
Is this real life?
Yeah, this is real life.
Okay, now I...
David after Dennis.
I love that one. I still always say, is this real life?
Because David was just got done with a dental surgery. He's still tripping in the back of the car. And his dad is videotaping him, still kind of wigging out.
Stay in your seat.
Kind of hard to listen to. But it reminded me of when my son Grant had his oral surgery. And I was in the recovery room. And Grant came to. And he looked up at me. And God is my witness. He simply said the following, and it terrified me. Grant, recovering from the anesthesia of oral surgery, looked up at me and said, "That was awesome." And I went, oh no, oh no.
Whoa, oh my God, oh my God. Oh my God. Woo! Oh my God, it's full on. Double rainbow all the way across the sky. Oh my God.
My son, her song is called Give Me More for a Reason.
Yeah, we know. My son was asking me today, what's your favorite all-time viral video? And I thought a lot of the ones you just heard. If you like me on Facebook at facebook.com/KingJohn, you'll see 200 of them. And I've got bad news for you. I recognize 100 of them. In fact, if I played a sound clip that is less than a half a second long, I'll bet you know the video that goes with it. And if you do, you'll win a swell prize after this on WGN. I've got a soundbite here for you, but I'm not sure if this is going to work because it's very brief. It's a signature sound from a famous, famous YouTube video. But I don't know if, because there's a little music underneath it from the source that I pulled it, maybe you won't be able to tell what it is. All right, Dak, tell me if you can tell me what this is from.
Ooh.
It's a screeching sound, and at the end you hear a little bit of music, and I'm sorry about that.
I feel like I'm a very big YouTube person, and I have no idea.
Yeah, I made that one too hard. The number is 312-981-7200. If you know what the very first part of this is from, and when I tell you what it is, you'll go, oh yeah, I remember the video. I remember that sound because the sound was important to it, and then you'll say, gee, John, why'd you make that so hard? Incidentally, you know that Charlie Bit My Finger video has been viewed. I've got the numbers here. Charlie Bit My Finger. You know that video where the kid is crying because his brother bit his finger?
It's probably my top YouTube video.
If you look at the top 10 all-time YouTube videos, the first one to appear that is not a music video is Charlie Bit My Finger. And that one has been viewed now 812 million times. 812 million times. I didn't know. Some of them, there's two videos, in fact, that have been viewed over a billion times. But those are music videos. So the world has Charlie Bit My Finger, which, if you don't know, goes a little bit like this. Charlie, that really hurt.
There's so many great things about the video. The British accent, the cuteness of the kid, and the fact that little Charlie gets this devilish little look and a little, like, evil laugh after he bites his older brother's finger. Yeah. You just watch it over and over and over again, and you always find it funny.
Yeah, maybe that's why that's so universally enjoyed. Everybody can relate to a scene like that in their childhood. 812 million views. The number three most viewed video of any kind of all time is Katy Perry's, one of her songs, and I don't remember which one now. 842 million views. Baby by Justin Bieber. That music video on YouTube has been viewed 1.1 billion times. And the all-time most viewed YouTube video, which has been viewed 2.2 billion times. I didn't know any of them were with a B. 2.2 billion times was, I'll tell you in just a second. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. Maybe you want to guess on that, and I'll give you a prize. I'll pick up a couple of phone lines here. Hey, George, it's John. You're on the air. How are you?
Hey, it's good to hear your voice. How you doing?
Good.
Can you play that first clip again? Because I honestly, I have no idea.
All right. You're quick with the gun, but now you don't know anything.
That's right. I called, you know, because the reason I called so quickly, I've had an account since 2005, since YouTube started, and I've
really?
Viewed, you can see how many views you've made on your account, and half of the views I've made were, signed into my account. The other half were at work where I'm not signed in. And on my account, I have viewed myself over 100,000 videos. So I'm almost positive that I was going to get it. But judging by the clip, I'm drawing a blank.
I made the clip too hard. So here it is. Hold on a second. Let me pull it up. Here we go. I'm going to give you the prize anyway and put this stupid contest I just created to rest. All right, are you ready? Congratulations, George. You just won.
Oh, thank you.
And
I'm trying to think here.
It is. All right, hold on one second. Hold, because somebody else is going to guess right in front of you. Hold on. Let me just give one more guess in here before I give it to you and then end this. Hey, Mike, you want to take a guess?
Yeah, it sounded like that one part when the squirrel looks right at the camera, the water skiing squirrel.
It's not that, but it is an animal. And, George, you know, thanks for the guess, Mike. I appreciate your call. George, it was the panda that's dozing and the little baby sneezes.
The sneezing panda. That's exactly what I was going to say, but you said there was music behind it.
I know. Well, that's because.
I knew it. Oh, my God. I should have said it. That was the first thing that came into my head was the sneezing panda. I love that video.
Sneezing panda.
Yeah.
And the music under there is our creation, not yours. So you're right. It kind of threw you off with the music there. But that's the sneezing panda.
I love that video.
Well, congratulations. You've just won. Let me see what I can give you. I'll give you a $25 gift certificate to Lou Malnati's. Visit one of the 37 Chicagoland locations. And I'll also give you a pair of tickets to the Paramount Theater in Aurora to go see Les Mis. The show is
in town. Oh, my God.
And that is an awesome production.
That is, you know what? I live in Aurora. So that
are you kidding?
Amazing. And my girlfriend took me to see, the movie. And then we also saw it on Broadway. And it was my favorite. It was the best.
Well, fate has brought us together this afternoon, my friend. I want you to hold on, talk to Kristen. We'll make sure you get those prizes, okay?
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening and hold on. All right, let's update you on the news. That's next on WGN. Thank you, David. It's 11. It's 11. It is somewhere. It's 1:40. 1:40 on WGN in Chicago and cold outside. In this segment, we want to talk a little TV. It's always a fun Saturday feature. It's something that I sort of initiated years ago when I took over Roy Leonard's Saturday show. And the only addition, the only tweak that I made to it, of course, he was great with Nick DiGilio. Roy had all of his regular segments, but we included a sort of rundown segment on TV, and we tapped a bunch of folks who you know write about television. Today, we tap Hit Fix Alan Sepinwall. Alan, am I saying your last name correctly? Sepinwall?
You are indeed. Thanks for having me.
Sure, and hitfix.com is your website, right?
Yep.
So it's sort of like get your fix of television. These are the hits, hitfix.com.
Yeah, just we write about TV, movies, entertainment.
So let's talk a little bit about TV right now. What are you really loving on TV currently?
The best show on TV right now at this moment is The Americans on FX. That's the spy drama about a couple of KGB deep cover operatives pretending to be an American married couple in Washington in the 1980s with Kerry Russell and Matthew Reese. It's fantastic on just about every level.
Yeah, I hear that every time I hear anybody talk about it. It's complicated, too, because their Russian bosses want them to sort of either pull their daughter in or out her, right?
Yeah, that's the big storyline this season. They want them to turn their teenage daughter into an asset, and at the same time, the husband, Matthew Reese, also has to recruit another teenage girl into the fold. It's really kind of messy and ugly in the way that The Sopranos and Breaking Bad and the best of these sort of 21st century cable dramas have been.
What have you been hearing about House of Cards? They dropped the entire season this week. Are people loving it?
I'm not the best person to ask because I don't really like House of Cards to begin with. I watched 3 episodes of the new season just for professional obligations and felt like, okay, that's enough. But I've heard mixed things from people so far. But the people who love House of Cards, they've already powered their way through the whole season because that's what Netflix lets you do.
Yeah, and they're not necessarily overjoyed. I power watched the first 2 seasons about 2 weeks ago, getting ready for this week. Now, I haven't watched any of the new episodes. The first season I thought was really good. The second season I didn't think was. So I'm really interested to see if they sort of get their footing back in this 3rd season.
Well, one of the things that they do that I thought was better, even though I didn't love it, was in the 2nd season, it's Frank Underwood versus the parade of morons, and every person he goes up against is just so dumb and gullible that it's not. It's supposed to make him look good, but instead it winds up making him look really lame because these are the only people he can actually defeat. And this year he's president, and without going into too much detail, it turns out that governing is a lot tougher than just sort of stealing jobs and climbing the ladder, and so he's having a lot more difficulty up front, at least, which was a better move after what they did last year.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, so the idea that he climbs his way to the top is interesting, but then what does he do when he gets there? Maybe that'll make this season a little better. I thought the speed with which he acquired the presidency was ludicrous, and I know it's a TV show, but the power he had as vice president and the fact that he was able to connive the president into resigning, I just thought was preposterous.
It's preposterous, and also the actor playing the president and the character of the president is about the most uncharismatic fictional POTUS that I think we've ever seen. It's just it seems like they pulled some guy off the street and said, hey, here, stand in the Oval Office.
You know, you wonder how that guy would have ever gotten elected. Let's talk about Downton Abbey then. Are you a fan of that show?
You're asking me about all the shows I don't like. I'm sorry. Downton Abbey I thought was really good in its first season, and after that I think it's gone very, very soapy and repetitive, and I haven't watched for a while now, I'm afraid.
We've been laughing at a lot of the episodes this year, with them, not at them. I mean, I don't know if they've decided to make it a little funnier or lighter, but we've enjoyed this season, I'll say that. What did you make of the Parks and Rec season finale?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. Parks and Recreation. I mean, you know, if you'd asked me the question of what's the best thing on TV a week ago, Parks and Rec would have been the answer. That, I think, is one of the all-time great comedies and really underappreciated for its whole run. And I thought that last episode where you jumped through the future and you saw what life had in store for everybody after the end of the show was just wonderful and funny and sweet in the way that show always was.
A lot of pressure on creators of shows to satisfy their longtime viewers for that last episode, isn't there?
Oh, there's a ton. I wrote this book called The Revolution Was Televised about like The Sopranos and Deadwood and The Wire and Lost and all the big dramas of the 2000s. And one of the running themes was just how often these shows that were super beloved in every other way, when you get to the ending, the expectations are so huge that nothing the creators can do would satisfy them. So some people are still mad that, you know, The Sopranos cut to black, or that, you know, they hate all of Lost now entirely because of the Lost finale, and on and on. And there's only a handful of TV shows that I think everyone loves the ending of. You know, Cheers is one, Mary Tyler Moore is one, MASH, 6 Feet Under is one. Even some people would say that MASH had gotten too serious by the end, and they don't like that episode, even though it's the most watched episode of TV ever.
Are you too young to have appreciated St. Elsewhere back in the day?
Oh, no, I was probably too young to have been watching it, but I watched it anyway, and that's one of the classic sort of divisive, polarizing finale, the one where you find out that the whole show was a fantasy of the main character's autistic son, and he's just staring at the snow globe of the hospital, and that's one that, like, half the people think is brilliant, and the other half of the audience think that it's the creator flipping the bird at them. It's really remarkable.
Alan, spoiler alert, some people haven't watched the whole thing. We should tell them before you do that. So
I think 30 years is fair for spoiler protection to lapse. I don't know. Call me crazy.
You know, that is an interesting argument, I think, and I have it with friends when there's this age right now. For instance, you can now have watched all of season three of House of Cards. So I guess you get to talk about it now, but give me a break. So when do we decide, since people have appointment television and then they have television on their own schedule, how do you decide when you get to blog or Facebook post or talk on the radio about certain episodes of shows, you know?
It's really complicated, and that's one of the weirder parts of my job these days in the age of on-demand and Netflix and everything else. And the way I've always sort of tried to approach it is I don't put big, obvious spoilers for recent things in places where you can't avoid them. So I wouldn't tweet a spoiler, because if you're following me on Twitter, you can't not see it. But for instance, I would put a blog post and, like, you can't see the spoiler in the headline, but once you click on it, the spoiler would be in the article itself. And that way, like, you're making the active choice to find out. And I think it's, you're never going to satisfy anybody, because there's going to be some guy who's saying, you know, don't tell me, you know, whether the fugitive catches the one-armed man or not, because I'm still just watching the DVDs now. But, you know, you do what you can, and I think that there is some level of common courtesy. During the first season of House of Cards, you know, if somebody spoiled, like, the big event of that season for me, yeah, you know, days after it premiered.
Well, going back for just a second to St. Elsewhere, I thought the final episode was terrific, but I think in this day and age, we would be a little more agitated. Look how we turned on How I Met Your Mother. I mean, people loved that show, waited anxiously for it, and that's kind of, would you say, the poster child for how to not end a series?
Well, it's kind of interesting to compare How I Met Your Mother to some of these other things, because one of the things people always complain about is they get to the ending and they say, oh, the creators were just making it up as they went along, and that's why the ending was terrible, and they should have had a plan from the beginning, and I'm outraged, and I want my money back for this free TV show. And How I Met Your Mother was a case where they planned that ending out from, like, the first or second season. They shot the stuff with the kids right early on in the show, and that was their plan, and they Wow. stuck to it no matter what, even after a point at which it became clear that it made no sense whatsoever to still end the show that way, and that it Yeah. was going to anger the fans, Yeah. and they still did it.
I want to ask you about a couple of other shows, and I want to take a break, and I want to get in a couple of calls. So let's do this. The number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Alan Sepinwall is on the line. His site is hitfix.com. They write about TV and movies there. Hitfix.com. Alan Sepinwall. Call 312-981-7200. I want to ask you for your take on Better Call Saul. Maybe you've got a question about a show. Call us now on WGN. Oh. 153 on WGN. This is John Williams. On a phone line, we're talking TV with HitFix.com's Alan Sepinwall. You know this song, right, Alan? Why am I playing it right now?
Because Pee Wee is coming back.
Is this a good thing? Did we miss him? Do we want him back?
I think probably it's time. I mean, Pee Wee has had sort of an up and down, leaving aside the other things that Paul Reubens has gone through. There have been some, you know, Pee Wee's Big Adventure is one of my favorite movies. Big Top, Pee Wee, less so. Pee Wee's Playhouse was wonderful. But when they did that HBO concert special, Pee Wee's Playhouse, a couple of years ago, I don't think that worked. So I'm always hopeful, and Judd Apatow is involved in producing this, so why not?
Producing this is going to be a TV show or movie?
It's going to be a movie for Netflix. Netflix is now, in addition to all the TV shows that they're making, they're starting to produce their own movies. So they have a deal with Adam Sandler. They're making other things. And, you know, a couple of days ago, they announced this thing with Reubens and Apatow.
Okay, but then who does Pee Wee Herman?
Paul Reubens will still play Pee Wee Herman.
He still does? I mean, I haven't seen him lately. I'm sure he's older than he was, I don't know, 15 years ago. He can still pull that off?
I think so. I mean, the HBO did the concert special a couple of years ago, and it was him playing the character, and he was older, but it's still, I mean, he was always too old to be acting the way Pee Wee Herman acts. I don't know that becoming this old really changes that any.
I saw the HBO special, and I loved it, so I'm super excited for this movie.
I wonder, so his sin was doing unsavory things in a movie theater to himself. Am I right about that? So is there any reason for us to, you know, punish him for that? I mean, if he does a good TV show, who cares? That should be our thinking on this, right?
I think enough time has passed.
Yeah, I try not to dwell too much on, like, the sins of the artist versus, you know,
the actual art they're creating. Sometimes you can't avoid it. Like, you know, my kids and I used to watch the Cosby Show and in repeats, and now we're not for obvious reasons. But, you know, if you start saying that I'm not going to watch anything by anyone who's done something bad, you're going to have a very small list of things you can still watch.
You know, I think about that sometimes when I watch 30 Rock or watch old 30 Rock episodes. Always funny, always good. Love it, love it, love it. And I think a lot of us said, okay, I'm never going to watch that show anymore, but it's still a great show.
Yeah, you have to be able to separate the performer from the thing that they're performing.
Hey, so what are you hearing about Better Call Saul? We kind of had a disagreement about that at my house. Have you seen four episodes now, and what are you hearing about it?
I've seen even the fifth episode, the one that's going to air on Monday. I like it a lot. I approached it kind of skeptically. I love Breaking Bad. That's one of the great shows of all time, but I didn't feel like we necessarily needed another show, and if we did, I don't know that we needed it to be about Saul, but they've done a really good job. It's not like Breaking Bad. It's more of sort of a comic drama, and Bob Odenkirk has been really good at the center of it, and it's not like great art necessarily yet, but it's a lot of fun.
It's slower. It's not as violent. It doesn't have you hanging on the edge of your sofa seat the way virtually every episode of Breaking Bad did. So I was the one in my house who was saying, you know, this isn't as gripping as I thought it was going to be. It's a great character study, and he's doing a great job at that character, that role, but I'm a little underwhelmed. Maybe I'm being unfair to it.
Well, I think you're also remembering the end of Breaking Bad as opposed to the beginning of Breaking Bad. The beginning of Breaking Bad is really slow. I go back and I read some of the reviews I wrote about it at the time, and I was really not crazy about that show, and my general attitude was get to the point already.
Yeah.
And that's really the way that that this creative team, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, operates. And so I've kind of learned to trust them in that regard at this point.
You also wrote recently about, and you wrote this, well, let me just quote you. In the wake of the Parks and Recreation finale, a Twitter follower asked me if the period when NBC had Parks, Community, The Office, and 30 Rock on the same night was the best comedy block ever. And then you cited a few other ones that might compete with that. And I think that was a really good question, and I thought your answer was spot on. Because in my life, the greatest comedy block ever was the early 70s when they had All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Bob Newhart Show. I even remember Love Boat coming on at the end of that lineup. Carol Burnett Show was in there for a period of time, and I just thought that was the best TV lineup ever. Now, I'm showing my age little bit, but I thought that was really good stuff.
Yeah, that's the lineup from the year I was born, the 73-74 season. It was the only year that All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, and Carol Burnett aired together because MASH moved to another night the next season. But it's really hard to top that. I think the only one that comes close is that, like, mid-80s NBC lineup where you had Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, Night Court, and Hill Street Blues. But the crazy thing about the CBS lineup was that was on Saturdays. You think about, like, Saturdays as this vast, you know, programming wasteland now, and that was the night when 40 years ago the networks put on their very best stuff.
So am I reading you correctly? Friends and Seinfeld were on the same night. I'm just replaying this lineup in my head. What did they have in between those two? How is that not in the top two of all time?
Because NBC spent most of the run when they had Friends and Seinfeld and ER together putting really awful shows at 8:30 and 9:30. So you had things like Suddenly Susan and Veronica's Closet and Caroline in the City and these really just bad shows where they had deals with a producer and they had promised them, like, if you bring your show to our network, we'll put you on after Friends. And so they wasted a lot of other good things they had on at the time, like News Radio, and didn't put those there. And so it's... The three shows anchoring that night are fantastic. The two in between exclude it from discussion.
Yeah, there's a description of what happens when you do that. I can't say it on the radio, but the second word is sandwich. And
yes.
I think it's very
apt.
That's
a quote from the creator of News Radio, who was really bitter that his show was not on Thursday. He came up with the best possible description that I'm not going to say here either.
You can read that description at hitfix.com. Alan Sepinwall, what a pleasure to meet you. Let's visit on a Saturday afternoon again sometime.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Alan. Take care now. It's 1:59. Let's catch you up on the news next on WGN. 6:09 on WGN. This is John Williams. We're here till 3 o'clock. Then the guys at the Beat talk sports. That makes sense. So Chicago's going to have a runoff election for mayor. The incumbent, Rahm Emanuel, got 45%. Chuy Garcia got about 33%. Willie Wilson got about 10%. So is he going to be a kingmaker? And it made me think, as I was thinking about the race for mayor in Chicago and how Rahm Emanuel didn't get to 50% despite the millions of dollars he had and the president at his disposal, it made me think about ranked choice voting. Do you know what ranked choice voting is? There's an organization called Fair Vote, and I know a little bit about it because it's a way that they use to elect people for a lot of offices in Minnesota. And a friend of mine is the executive director of Fair Vote Minnesota. Her name is Jean Massey. And I asked her to come on and just talk to us for a second about how they do it there and elsewhere and how that would have changed the election here. Jean, welcome to the show. How are you?
Well, hi, John. I'm fine. It's fun to be on your Chicago show.
Yeah, here's a chance to pitch to Chicago and Illinois, say, a different way to elect officials. What would you say is the highest office for which ranked choice voting is used?
It would be the Minneapolis mayor position, or in the St. Paul mayoral position, similar to Chicago's mayor's race right now.
Are there any federal offices that use it?
No, none yet. And in Minnesota and in Maine, I'd say those are the two states kind of ahead of the pack, making their way towards some possibility of using this for statewide elections.
Statewide elections. So the governor and the governor, any other statewide offices in Minnesota, they don't use it either. But in the municipal elections in St. Paul and Minneapolis, for the mayor, they use ranked choice voting.
That's correct.
Okay, so how, and as I understand it, and you'll do the explaining. I always know enough to talk myself in a corner on this.
You do a good job, John.
When you use ranked choice voting, you don't just vote for your favorite candidate. You vote for your second favorite candidate, your third favorite candidate. You vote as many times as there are candidates on the ballot or as is prescribed by that particular election. But you vote multiple times for the same office, correct?
Well, you rank your preferences, as you were saying, and that just means your ballot continues to count until you get a candidate with a majority of the vote. And that's essentially what Chicago is doing now. The election in the mayor's race, like many of the ward races, was forced into a runoff. No candidate had that majority threshold required by Chicago elections. So there's a second round. Under ranked choice voting, you eliminate the need for two separate elections and consolidate into one go by simply asking voters to rank their preferences. So you mark your favorite candidate and your backup choices with the belief that, boy, if I voted in this case for Willie Wilson and that candidate gets defeated because he had too few votes to win, my second choice now would count in the next round. Just like now, if I'm a Willie Wilson voter, I would go back to the April runoff and vote my second choice. And what we see happening in Chicago, I'm sure, are the candidates are now going out to ask for those second choice votes from Willie Wilson's voters and from the other voters who did not vote for the top two candidates.
Right, but they could have done that already.
One go.
Yeah, they could have done
it already.
And we've seen this sort of played out, the consequences of this, with, say, important federal elections for the president. If it's a slim margin, but there was a candidate who appeared on the ballot who was similar to somebody who just lost, that guy hates it because that one candidate maybe pulled some votes away from an Al Gore or from a somebody or from a George Bush, for that matter, but somebody who could have won or won more handily. But there was somebody too akin to them who was on the ballot. And so you hate it when that happens. And people have that real conundrum when they go into the ballot, into the booth, because they think, all right, I really want this third party candidate, if you will, but I can't afford to vote for them because I know they won't win, and now the vote that I could have given to X or Y is never going to get counted. So it hurts third-party candidates, doesn't it?
That's right. There's nothing worse for voters or for candidates and campaigns to have split votes that can never come back and pool together. And in Chicago, I think the voters saw that a while back, the public did, and said, well, we'll do runoffs. If no candidate is popular enough with 50% of the vote, we'll do a runoff. But the problem with runoffs are so many, and what we're seeing in Chicago, I'm assuming, are now just going forward more open elections. And so if there are going to be more open elections, you can expect yet more runoffs, which translate into much more expense for campaigns as well as for voters and taxpayers, much less participation in the election of the outcome because there's big disparity in turnout between the two rounds. Either voter turnout was pretty low this particular election.
Yeah, right. I mean, I see your point about that, too. You figure, well, Rahm's going to win no matter what, so what's the point? But now, if we'd had ranked choice voting in Chicago, I could have voted for Willie Walson as my favorite candidate, right?
That's right.
And then Willie doesn't win. Say Willie gets the fewest votes. So then suppose on the ballot where I said Willie Wilson is my favorite candidate and Chuy Garcia will be my second favorite candidate and Rahm would be my third. Mm-hmm. So then after the votes are counted, if Willie Wilson is in the bottom, then you throw out all the Willie Wilson votes, but then you still use my ballot and you now count my Chuy Garcia vote, correct?
That's right. You throw out Willie Wilson as a candidate. He gets defeated. He's lost. But your ballot continues to count until that election's over. So, yes, you're now your ballot gets placed into the Garcia pile. And whoever voted for Emmanuel gets their second choice counted for that candidate.
I wonder if
people
knew that.
They just keep going that and see who wins.
Yeah, I wonder if people knew that. I wonder if they thought, hey, we can, you know, Rahm's probably going to be mayor anyway. I don't have a dog in this hunt. I'm not that vested in it. But, I mean, I wonder if people thought that they had ranked choice voting and a way to vote for anybody they want and not essentially throw away a vote. I wonder if more people would have turned out, and I wonder if Chuy Garcia would have won.
Well, then we wouldn't have seen the negativity we saw, and we're going to probably see a whole lot more of that before the runoff in April. What the traditional system actively fosters is a lot of negative campaigning, and attacking the other candidate is an effective strategy. And what we saw in Minneapolis in 2013 in a big open mayor's race was a whole different style of campaigning. Attack campaigning went by the wayside.
Why would attack campaigning go away with ranked choice voting?
Because it really hurts candidates to attack the opponents because they need those candidates' supporters for second choice votes and third choice votes.
Right, so it
means that if they go on the attack, they're alienating those voters and they risk getting those votes. So we saw the candidates stay focused on the substance and the issues, staying away from attacking the candidates. They drew the differences out, but they didn't have to go negative in order to get those votes. And related to that, we were surprised by how much of a difference we saw in this area. The two leading campaigns in Minneapolis created PACs. The leading opponent to the candidate who won, Mayor Betsy Hodges, raised and spent 3.5 times more than the winning candidate. And that money couldn't be used to buy negative ads on TV or to do negative mailings because it would have backfired. And that didn't happen.
How many candidates are on the ballot for mayor in Minneapolis?
Well, more than people expected. There were a whole 35, and that's because a low filing fee was in place, and a lot of people just put their names on the ballot simply to be there. But in reality, there were about 5 or 6 very serious candidates who were continuously in the debates and who most people voted for.
Yeah. Well, I know a little bit about this, right? I do a show in Minneapolis.
Yeah, you and sure
I,
did.
and I interviewed those 5 main candidates for one special election broadcast, right? Before the election.
I recall
day.
That. Yes, it was a good interview.
Well, but I'm thinking about it because you're right. So they're all lined up there, live radio and a studio audience, and none of them said anything especially bad about any of the others. And it was because if they said, this guy's a terrible guy, he kicked his dog, he's the worst guy ever, which you see all the time, say, in Chicago and Illinois ads. But if they said that, all of the other people who are going to vote for all of the other candidates will never rank you very high because you're such a mean, bad person. You're saying bad things about everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So instead, they all said, well, I respect the opinion of my opponent here. I just believe I have a better path. And then hopefully they'll garner their votes when when the ballots get recounted, which, by the way, makes for a more civil but more boring election process, Jean.
Well, some people tended to think that, but if you go and poll voters, they were very relieved by the lack of negativity.
It was weird to see so few hostile ads. Nobody. I'll tell you what, you should have seen when, you probably know, you follow elections, the gubernatorial campaign in Illinois was just a mess.
It was a mess, and voters get turned off by that. Now, their campaign and pundits and no offense here, but really people who are in the news arena really like to play up that kind of negativity and play on the attacks that are made during campaigns. But it's a big turnoff for voters.
If we'd had that for governor in Illinois, who knows how that would have played out? I mean, think
who
about
knows?
That. You know, mm-hmm. You could have, if you didn't like either of the candidates, and I don't think there were, let's put it this way, many people were not enthralled with either choice, okay? So Rahner wins. But what if you had a third candidate you could have voted for as a protest vote and mm-hmm. not feel that that was throwing away your vote, because then your second choice still could have been Quinn or Rahner or whomever?
Well, a big benefit of ranked choice voting is that it fosters more choice because it gets rid of the spoiler problem and the split vote problem.
Exactly.
And that means candidates jump in, the playing field is leveled, and voters have the freedom to vote their heart and not their fear. And that's why voters resoundingly like ranked choice voting. It empowers their ballot, their vote, and gives them more choice.
It's 2:21 on WGN. This is John Williams. My friend Jean Massey is with fairvotemn.org, fairvotemn.org. Is there a fairvoteil.org yet? Do you guys have an organization in Illinois or Chicago?
No, but it sounds like there should be one there soon. If it's true that this kind of that elections in Chicago are going to be increasingly open and runoffs are increasingly the norm, why not go to an instant runoff ranked choice voting system? It's a cutting edge for politics here in the Midwest, but it's really not a new idea. It's been around for a very long time, but it's much more efficient and effective and empowering, again, for voters. So hopefully it would be something that Chicago and Illinois could consider. It seems ripe for that discussion, and it would help resolve a lot of the problems I think we're likely to see in Chicago elections in a runoff system.
And you would know right away. I mean, they would run it until they had a winner. Here's the fundamental problem or question people may have. I'm going to pause here. You can respond to this afterwards, Gene, and we'll take your call at 312-981-7200. But this is the deal. It's no longer one person, one vote, or at least it doesn't feel that way. It's one person, one ballot. But on that ballot, you get to select several people based on the order in which you like them. So is that really the American way or not? It's 2:22. This is WGN. 2:25. We've got a couple minutes with Jean Massey, Executive Director of Fair Vote Minnesota. FairVoteMN.org is where you find out about how they do ranked choice voting. It would have already settled the Chicago mayoral race, and that's how they vote for mayor in Minneapolis, St. Paul, other cities across the country. You could do it if you wanted. Jean, all of our lines are ringing, so we're going to pick up some phone calls real quick here. But fundamentally, just tell me if this is some sort of violation of the one person, one vote idea we have in this country.
Yeah, no, not at all. In fact, it is one person, one vote. So just like you do a two-round system right now in Chicago, you go and you vote once in February and then once in April. What you would do under ranked choice voting is rank your preferences, and you get your vote counts in every round as long as you rank.
Okay, I'll need your help back at the station, Kristen. And Krista, let's leave Jean on, and let's bring up on line four Steve. Steve, you're on WGN. What's your question or comment? Hi.
If you're questioning the Americanism of the original Americanism of one person, one vote, it took us a couple hundred years to get to that, didn't it? I mean,
yeah, kind of did.
We didn't get the women to vote until 100 years ago or so.
Sure, women, blacks, minorities, property owners, all of those were hurdles that we've cleared over the years. So what is your point about that?
That this is another continuation of evolution in the direction of fairness.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Steve, thanks for the call.
That's a good point.
Let's go to line one. You're on WGN. So your question or comment is what? Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad to hear you, even if it's only on Saturday.
Thank you.
I missed you during the week, John.
Yeah, well, I appreciate
and Dean,
that.
Thanks for coming to visit Chicago or talk to us about it. You don't live here. I've lived here my entire life, so I know how the system works, but your idea is so good because we have kind of like a third Latino, a third white, a third black kind of population. And most white people, I think, will vote independently because we elected Barack Obama. We're white. He was black. I voted for him. You know, I don't care what color he is. And I don't care if Rob's personality is short-tempered or arrogant. I don't care. He's the only guy who can run this city. And the other voters know it. But I think both Latino and black people tend to vote who they are. And I have a girlfriend who we have dinner every other Friday night, and she said to me a couple weeks ago, I'm going to vote for Rahm, of course, but my whole family is voting for one of the black guys. She's a black lady. She's a wonderful lady, and we've been friends for 20 years. And we go out to dinner, and we talk about this stuff, and she said, you know, the Latinos are going to vote for Chewy, of course, even though he couldn't run the city if he tried. And we talk like this, and I'm thinking, your way would make it clear that even if people vote like I'm Irish, so I'm going to vote for the Irish, or you're Italian, so you're going to vote for the Italians, or whatever people do, in your way, it wouldn't matter, would it? Because they'd name their first guy first, and then they'd vote for Rahm or whoever they thought could really run the city. And then if their guy didn't get enough, or the black guy or the Latino guy didn't get enough, you'd eventually elect the man who's the only man who can keep this city from becoming Detroit.
Yeah, and you're assuming that would be Rahm, but maybe it's not. Let's see what's your reaction to all that, Jean?
Well, I love the point that you're making, and you're exactly right. It lets someone really vote their preference, but you want to make sure that ultimately the winner, the candidate who ends up on the other side on Election Day, is the candidate who at least a majority of voters believes is the best person for that office.
It's funny, though, because you and I have been
the person with the most votes in round one.
You and I have been talking about it in terms of maybe left and right. But if you throw in racial mix, and I'm not so sure that whites in America and in Chicago don't vote their skin color the same way other blocks do, too. But I don't have time to get into that here. But, I mean, do you think it – what sort of impact does it have on racial block voting then?
Oh, it has a huge impact. So in Minneapolis is very similar to Chicago in some ways. It's very diverse. It has a nonpartisan election system like Chicago does. And race and ethnic politics play a big role. And voters do indeed vote for a candidate who represents them in that fashion. And sometimes that candidate can win. Sometimes it's not that candidate, but they're allowed to vote their preference as a first choice. And what we saw in Minneapolis was that in large part because of ranked choice voting in 2013, it elected the most ethnically and racially diverse city council, and gender-wise as well, it elected a much more balanced city council.
Yeah,
and there is now a women's mayor.
Minneapolis has a Somali, I believe the only Somali council member in the United States, at least of large cities. We're out of time. Jean, let's you and I visit again maybe sometime down the road, but keep that in mind. And if you want
to
know
more,
to ranked choice voting is all told at fairvotemn.org, fairvotemn.org. Jean, stay well.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. See you back in Minneapolis.
Thank you, David. 2:39 on WGN. This is John Williams. Mark Baser wrote in Chicago Magazine, in the latest issue, can any haircut be worth $200? We'll talk to Mark in 14 seconds. In part, he wrote, two things I believe to be true after receiving a $200 haircut, not including tip from Anthony Cristiano at his namesake salon in Trump Tower. Number one, I will go to my grave without ever again forking over that much for a cut, $200. Two, it was the best damn haircut I've ever had. I know what you're thinking. There's no way any men's haircut is worth that much. We'll ask him about that in just a minute. He later writes, Cristiano has been charging these rates, even $350 for women, by plying his craft at Trump for 2 years now, despite the obvious risk of associating haircuts with the Donald. Later, after his haircut, Mark Baser wrote this. He understands, he's speaking about Cristiano, the relationship between my hair and my bone structure better than all of the previous people who've cut my hair, barber, stylist, mom, combined. You see, I have a square jawline, given the nature of my cheekbones, means that my hair should... Okay, I can hear you sniggering. Come on. Tell me you didn't fall for that nonsense, to which I reply, you just don't get it. Mark Baser gets it. He joins us now on WGN. Hey, Mark, it's John. How are you?
How
Welcome
are you?
To the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Wisely, the story that you have in Chicago Mag includes a picture of you with your new $200 haircut. I've known you for many years, and that is an amazingly good haircut. Oh, my God,
right?
You look good with that.
I know, and it's... You know, it's one of those things where, like I say at the beginning of the article, I'll never be able to do it again, but I can understand why you would do it, why you would pay that much money. The guy is good.
I don't know how to say this without saying previously you didn't look very good, but you look you look so strong and confident and handsome. You just look great with that haircut.
Well, you hit on something, and that's what Anthony Cristiano, who's over at the Trump, was saying. Because the reason why we did the story was it's in the power issue for Chicago Magazine. So we wanted to kind of understand, you know, what's a power haircut. And his whole point, and you can call it a cliche if you want, but his whole point is that there is no power haircut. We're the days of Gordon Gekko are over. Now it's all about how do you feel? How do you feel inside? And I got to say, I walked out of that salon, and I felt great.
How would you describe your hair or your attention to your hair prior to the $200 haircut?
Well, I would say that I look at it every maybe 4 or 5 days and see if all the hairs are still falling in relatively the same place.
Do you comb
then I
or
do...
brush your hair every day?
No, I don't do that. I go through products.
Yeah.
I guess so. Once in a while I will, but it always ends up, I don't know if other people do this. I'll put product in my hair. I'll wave it all around. I'll sculpt it, whatever you're supposed to do. And then I'll think, God, this looks worse than it did before. So I'll wet my hair down, and then it will go back to some kind of approximation of what it was before I put the product in.
You have thick hair. You have brown hair.
I have beautiful hair. I do have beautiful hair. That should
hair.
Be noted.
But I've always felt that your hair was a catastrophe. Kind of.
What? More so than, let's say, I don't know, yours?
Your hair is a mess. And I've never known if it was studied.
That's not true.
If you're like, this is my look, it's kind of wild, I'm a young, hip, urban guy, or if you just didn't care, or if you really worked at it, but it was so hard to erase. I was intrigued when I saw the hair flow and shape, and you just look so good in that picture. You look so different.
Yeah, I mean, now that you're saying all that, I'm thinking maybe I should go back. I mean, here's what he said, and this is because you get some people. I told a lot of people that I was doing the story, and then afterwards, and I would say 75% of the people kind of laugh, like, "Oh my God, I would that's too much, never do that." But he said something interesting. He said sometimes you go to Leona's, right? You go to a restaurant like that, and you'll spend $40 for if you got a few people with you. That's fine. You might enjoy that. But once in a while, you want to go to the high-end restaurants. And he said that's what this is. And I think I agree with that.
Well, do people who get $200 haircuts go back? Does he have a lot of return customers?
I would assume. I think they're mostly. I don't think many people go just once. I think it's – but I could see going, if you had a big event, if you had a once a year or you just wanted to feel great for 3 weeks, let's say you were – I don't know. You were just feeling low about yourself. Like, why not? Why not? I mean, I spend most of my, I don't know. I don't know how much you spend for a haircut. $25 or something like that. Like if you spend $25, you should assume you're getting something different than if you spend $200. And I think there's this kind of skepticism that, come on, is it really worth that? And I totally understand that. And I still think that to some extent. So I don't know. Hopefully the piece kind of skirted that line between saying, look, it is worth it, and I understand why you won't believe me.
Well, I think it's worth it if you have it. But, you know, if you don't, it's just not.
Right. It, yeah, yeah.
But
if you have to pay, if you have to pay for food and shelter with that money, not a good idea.
Well, exactly. And so I do see the difference. It's a better haircut than you've had before. But I don't think you or I are in an economic bracket that affords that. And we would probably choose not to. But you know, the other thing
here's something you just pointed out. You said, and I hope you were saying it slightly in jest, but you said, Mark, I've always thought of you as looking, I don't know if the word was terrible, but it was somewhere along that line.
I believe the word was catastrophe.
Yeah. All right. So those similar words, maybe yours is actually a little worse. And what is the first thing people see? They see your face and your hair is on top of your face. So from that, if knowing that you thought that about me makes me think, God, maybe, you know, if I had a big job interview or I had a big event or something like that, I should think differently because I don't want to present catastrophe to the world. Nobody wants that.
Yeah. Well, maybe catastrophe has a certain cachet. Like I said, it could be studied indifference or it could be so hip I don't get it, but maybe I'm intimidated by the old hair. But the hair you have now in that picture... Did you guys run in the magazine before? You should have run it before.
I think I was deemed too bad. We didn't want people looking at that.
It would hurt sales.
Yeah.
I know. I want to post the after picture, and I don't see it on ChicagoMag.com.
Scroll down. Just scroll down. It's there.
Okay.
That page.
We'll grab it.
We'll repost it.
Are we going to post it on my Facebook page, Decker?
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. Or, like I said, people can just – it's in the article. People can call me – and set up an appointment to come run their hands through my
You'll swing by. Here's the thing, though. A haircut is actually something any of us can do. Why do we pay brain surgeons a lot? Because you and I can't do that. It's a unique skill. Nobody else can do that. But I could cut your hair tomorrow, and you could find somebody for $25 to cut your hair, and it'd be just fine. So it really is hard to justify a service that, in essence, is no different than something you can do yourself.
I guess so. Go back to the restaurant analogy. You could make scrambled eggs, right? You could do that. Or you could make an omelet, but you still might go out for a great brunch and get a great omelet. You could make a steak.
Yeah.
But but
hear me out on this, Mark. But at some, I mean, then why doesn't he charge you $10,000? Because that would be a ripoff. And I wonder where the line is between it's a unique service and he's just taking advantage of. I don't know what the end of that sentence is, but
what you're hitting at is how is anything priced that does not involve some actual product in which the parts cost money?
Yeah.
You know
right.
what I mean?
It's a
so,
service.
I don't know. Yeah. Service. Right. I don't know. That's how the market decides. Right. I think he was saying to me, he was actually saying that if he were setting up in New York, he would have been charging me. He could have charged me. It was $200 for a man's haircut, $350 for a woman. He could charge probably twice that in New York.
That's and women. Why women $350? Because they have more hair. I mean, that's kind of. I know women's blouses cost more than men's shirts, and it's the same amount of. It's less fabric. It makes no sense.
Ridiculous. It's the market. I mean, I think he even copped to the fact. He was even like, I know that seems a little. It's probably not. It's probably a little ridiculous, but that's the way it is. I mean, he's not the only one doing that. That's across the board. You know?
Well, if the market will bear it, then I guess that's how you know what it's worth. I want to read one more sentence, and then I'm going to let you go. You wrote, quote, if you're expecting an over-the-top stereotype of a high-end stylist, you've come to the wrong place. Cristiano is calm, understated. Like they say about the world's best athletes, the game, or in this case, the haircut, seems to slow down for him.
It's a good line. That's a good line, huh? That line is almost as good as the haircut.
And I'm reading that and I'm thinking, really? Did you just say that? Did you just say
line.
That the haircut slows down for him?
It's called humor.
See the follicle. The hair looked like a melon, and he was just standing up there.
But here's the thing. Here's what I meant. Like, he did not – there was nothing about it that was frenetic. There was nothing about it that felt like, oh, my God, I'm in the presence of greatness, except for the fact that he was calm he was understated, yeah. And by the end of it, it looks great. I mean, it was just a guy with scissors. Like, that was it in a call. Well,
that's the thing. I want to stand in the corner and watch him do it, and then, hell, I'll do it for $175. What is he doing that I couldn't do with a couple of clips and snips?
Everything.
It's $250 on WGN. Mark Baser's piece is titled, Can Any Haircut Be Worth $200? It's in the latest issue of Chicago Magazine. Go to chicagomag.com, chicagomag.com. Mark is also the guy who does the stand-up show at the...
Hello?
Are there other people in the room there with you, Mark?
I had a four-year-old who just walked in the door.
All right, well, we'll wrap this up really quick. Any other thing I can plug for you? Do you have another show
coming
up? He
just got back from Anthony Cristiano's himself. I'm hooked.
now that's wasted money.
Yeah. You know what's wasted money? I'll tell you, you go to a kid's haircut place, it's like a specialty kid's haircut place. They charge you $25, and it takes, I'm not joking, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That is actually worth less per minute than my haircut was.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, I got to run. I got to let you go. We'll talk to you later, Mark. Thanks
for
your time.
Have a good weekend. All right.
It's 2:52. We have some phone calls on this topic. We'll pick up the lines after a quick break on WGN. .254 on WGN. The most viewed YouTube video of all time is this one. Our first segment earlier in the show this afternoon was about the 10-year anniversary of YouTube, which may or may not have passed. The YouTube was created, and then eventually videos got posted. So one way to look at it is April 23rd is the 10-year anniversary of YouTube, and it may have been a couple of weeks ago when it was first created. Either way, since then, we've been posting videos, and we were talking about some of our all-time favorite, and then we just went ahead and looked up what the most popular videos are of all time. Number two is Baby by Justin Bieber. That's been viewed 1.1 billion times with a B, but way above that is Psy's Gangnam Style. And that song, that music video, and it really is fun, isn't it, has been viewed 2.2 billion times. Oppan Gangnam Style. I know what you're doing right now. I know what you're doing right now. Oppan Gangnam Style. You're bobbing, aren't you? How can you not? Gangnam Style. Go back and watch that video sometime today. It's really fun. It's 2:55. Okay, hey, listen, the guys from the Beat are in the studio. Let's talk a little bit about the sports they're talking about next on WGN.
Wow, it's snowing like crazy outside. Sounds like the perfect time to go hit some golf balls at Golf Center Des Plaines. At Golf Center Des Plaines, they have heated hitting bays, a 300-yard lighted landing area, and an automated teeing system. It's easy, comfortable, and cheaper than flying to Florida. Spring will be here before you know it, so get your golf game ready. Visit GolfCenterDesPlaines.com, just north of Golf Road on River Road in Des Plaines. Golf Center Des
Plaines. As an entrepreneur, you're always on the go. So turn your mobile phone into a business phone system with Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. Get a new business number or keep your current one. Sound professional with a main greeting and multiple extensions that forward callers to your mobile phone. You can even get voicemails transcribed. Join over 150,000 small businesses who stay connected with Grasshopper. See how it works at grasshopper.com, the entrepreneur's phone system.
Beginning in 1930. It's the world's longest-running Christian outreach radio program, and it's right here on WGN, the Lutheran Hour, Sunday morning at 6.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story of how SelectQuote goes to bat for you buying term life insurance. A while back, a man called me who had had prostate cancer. He asked if I could beat a very high quote another life insurance agent had given him. I said, "Let me see." Well, I took his pertinent information, then shopped the highly rated, price-competitive companies we represent, and found one who pre-approved him for a premium way below what he had been quoted. When it comes to term life insurance, No other company touches SelectQuote's experience and expertise in finding the right policy at the right price for almost anyone. How about you?
For your free quote, call 1-800-500-2260. That's 1-800-500-2260. 1-800-500-2260. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save.
257. John Williams, Saturdays from 1 to 3. Next Saturday, you will not hear me doing this show. I'm going to pop in on Kathy and Judy's show next Saturday, which comes on at 9 in the morning if the girls let me. But then at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my plan is to be part of the big jumble event which is going on at the Tribune Tower. When they asked me to do Saturdays, I said, sure, but I got to do my jumble event. It's going to be Saturday, March 7th at 1 o'clock in the Tribune Tower. I'll be hosting with the creators of Jumble. Actually, they're doing a jumble event. You know the little game you play in the newspaper? We're going to do a live jumble. We're going to create one. You can get an autographed personalized jumble done there. It'll be a lot of fun. It's a great way to escape the cold in a Chicago winter. And that's at the Tribune Tower as part of the Trib Nation events. If you want to know more, it costs you $20 to go. It's a unique and smart investment. Go to either jumble.com or tribnation.com. I also posted on my Facebook page about that. I'm King John on Facebook. It's 2:58 on WGN. In the studio now, Adam Hoge and Connor McKnight getting ready on the beat to talk some sports. What's going on, guys?
Hi, John.
John?
Hey. I got a little angry for a split second. I was driving in listening to your show, and when you guys were talking about TV blocks, some of the best TV blocks of all time,
right?
And your guest mentioned how NBC could have put News Radio in between Friends and Seinfeld.
Oh,
but they missed that opportunity. I love News Radio, and I love Friends, and I love Seinfeld. And when that came up, I got so angry because I was like, that would be the greatest hour and a half of television maybe ever.
Instead, they had Jesse or Veronica's Closet or Suddenly Susan. They were always trying to make another show great by putting it in between, right?
What kills me about News Radio, like that, it's such a great show. You've got Phil Hartman just playing the glue guy, you know, like the guy he was on SNL, and you've got one of the greatest comedians of all time, and he's just kind of there to drive a joke along every once in a while. It's like criminally underused.
That's so interesting you say that. I should have watched that show. You know how many episodes of that show I've watched? Zero. I have not watched 10 seconds of that, and people who watch that love that show.
You'd love it too. As a radio guy too, you'd love it because it's Phil Hartman has this character that essentially, he just, you know, he goes in the silent box and he does his news updates, and everything in the world could be going wrong around him. And then the light goes on and it's now back to WGN News. I'm Phil. You know, it's just, oh, God, it's just fantastic. The guy's wonderful.
Wow. Well, he said one of the great ones of all time was Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, and Night Court or Hill Street Blues. That was
okay,
a good
yeah
one, too. And then, of course, you had Parks Community, The Office, and 30 Rock. That was a good lineup.
Yeah, that was pretty good.